You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there. And no one, no government agency has jurisdiction over the truth.
The truth is out there, and tonight on an all-new I Wanna Believe, we are going to continue our search for the truth right here on the Podzilla 1985 Network. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Shannon Young. I'm going to be your host tonight on I Wanna Believe, our monthly or so talk about all things spooky, controversially weird, and whatnot. It's the X-Files minus the whimsy. Yes. With me, of course, I have my co-host, good friend, Mr. Tanner Calvert, the man himself.
Hey, I went first. Ain't that some shit?
Well, I was thinking about this. I'll tell you, explain in a second. And Double H here with us tonight.
Hot tea.
Also listening, but not contributing, Lindsay Wolfgang. And she's still not contributing, so good job, Lindsay. Sticking with the script. Yeah. I thought about it, and I thought, you know, Hunter hosts PZ85 Plays. I host pretty much everything else. Oh, well, Hunter also hosts, obviously, The Inquest and...
Arguably,
I almost said Battle of the Bands, and I knew that was wrong.
So, I don't hate that, but I'd have to, like, Battle of the Bandwidth? I don't know.
That's actually,
I feel like there's something there.
That's pretty good too. So I wanted to put you up there, Tanner, since you and I basically created this section of the Podzilla 1985, landscape. So,
and I have hosted this one a time or two.
You have hosted this a time or two. You've hosted a couple shows a time or two. Never, I think, did you ever host Tanner Thursday though?
Oddly enough, no.
Which was named after you.
Mm-hmm.
So. Thank you. I miss
those Thursdays.
Thank you for this. Hey, you can still do it. On Broadway. You can head over there, bring your own blankets, and you can.
That is terrifying. He did host a terrifying Tanner Thursday last year. Remember, because it was last year's October was the Oops All Quizzes edition.
Yes.
Of Terrifying Tanner Thursday.
Oh, I did host the one. Yeah, that's right.
It was the month that almost killed the show completely. Thanks, Kaz.
Look, I had fun with the quizzes.
Yeah, I had fun with all of them but one. Kaz's. Anyway,
mine. You didn't.
No, he's not talking about
it. Definitely not talking about yours. So it's been, about a month since we started this, since we did the last one of these. You'll notice the new music at the beginning of the show. You'll notice our new logo. I've been working on some new stuff. Hunter has been working on cleaning up the site. Tanner caught 20 crappie earlier. So congratulations. That's all.
I thought that was a bit.
That's all. Things
I thought you just pulled a number out of your
ass. No, that is a true story.
That is a true story.
As was confirmed. I think he's looking for the fish now.
No, they're in the freezer.
Well, what the fuck they doing in there?
Where are they?
Oh, sorry. Channeling my
inner... Scully, you're never going to believe this.
Well, G Mulder, there's also this report of all these fish Tanner caught.
I hardly think the FBI is concerned with that.
Hey, speaking of Tanner, our good friend Tanner Calvert recently helped come up with an idea that we talked about on the last show, but we didn't go into a lot of detail. We're going to give a little bit more detail about it tonight because it has officially been announced, Tanner. Strange Tales 2022, the Midwest Conference on the Unknown. It's August 5th through the 7th at the Drury Plaza Hotel here in Cape Girardeau. You can find them at www.cape-con. No.
Cape-events.com.
/paranormal. Okay. Yeah. So I wanted to get that out. But then I saw the dash symbol and I didn't know what the name of it was briefly. So that was a problem with my brain.
Tickets are on sale. They've got single day, whole weekend, and whole weekend VIP.
Yes. Tanner, tell us a little bit about this. Just really quick.
So, So the whole weekend VIP, I highly suggest everybody check into this because one of the most haunted places in Southeast Missouri is the Glen House in Cape. Ken, our fearless leader for the conference, has gotten us into the Glen House for a VIP event Saturday. So once the con closes on Saturday evening, your boys here with I Want to Believe in Podzilla will be moving over to the Glen House for the VIP event.
Yes.
Ghost hunting will be taking place and all kinds of different things. It's going to be a very fun night.
I took a tour of the Glen House once. They talked to me a little bit about the ghost rumors and the ghost sightings and how people were afraid to be there. And I am very excited to go there at night because, as you know, ghosts generally only come out at night. They don't come out in the daytime for whatever reason. They're not a fans of the daylight. So
and I'm going to – I was talking to a friend of the show, Brandon Manker. He was on it one time with us. Excuse me. We're going to get a hold of the Cape Parks and Rec and see if we can't get into Old Lormer after the Glen House. So keep that in mind for –
It's sounding like a longer – like a longer night by the minute.
It's a long night.
So we've been trying to get into Lormer Cemetery for years.
That's true. Well, I've been into Lormer Cemetery many times in the day.
I'm talking about at night for a ghost hunt.
Because, again, the ghosts come out at night. Yeah.
They keep very different schedules.
Yeah. So, we're going to try to make an event, a weekend of it.
I went to Old Lormer.
We already have.
More of a weekend of it.
I took a picture. We took lots of pictures. And I took this one picture. It was a video. And it looked like there was a figure behind one of the big monuments in the graveyard. And it looked like it was peeking out at me and slowly going back. And I lost my shit. I thought this was it. I found the evidence. But as we studied it more and more, it turns out that it was just a series of branches and leaves that it was zoomed out far enough, it looked like it took the shape of a person. And I don't think I've been that disappointed in a long time. I thought I'd finally found the evidence that I was searching for. But I am excited to go back.
Matrixing is a thing.
It is. And that's most of the time, that's what you see. I don't know, do you guys ever go to Reddit?
For the paranormal?
What is this again?
Reddit?
Sounds familiar. I don't know.
There's a r/ghost that I'm a part of, and r/paranormal, and so much, and God bless their souls, so much of it is, did I catch a ghost? And then they show a picture, and I look at that picture for about 20 minutes, and I don't see anything. They've got just a blank area circled, and I'm like, what are you seeing here? Because nobody else
you
sees
shouldn't.
It.
You should really continue that subscription to r/useless red circle. Because that's one of my favorite subreddits where people post pictures of something with a red circle around it, and you're like, yeah, okay, what am I? Well, it's either that or they circle like the entire image, and it was like, well, cool, thank you for pointing out that I should look at the entire thing you posted.
I 100% believe somebody who is on Useless Red Circle has immediately taken some of those pictures over to the paranormal page just to screw with those people.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I've said this before, and I'll say it a million times. I love the paranormal community. We are obviously part of the paranormal community. But you have to have a healthy dose of skepticism when it comes to how you approach the paranormal. Believing every... That's why this show is called I Wanna Believe, and not, yes, I believe it, send me more. Because we really pride ourselves on trying to figure out what's real, what's not real, and exploring the unknown and the, you know, the scary and spooky side of life.
Take that, yes, have some.
To be fair, when the spooky shit comes up, Hunter is just Lisa Simpson with a coffee cup.
That's why I bring the mug
every time.
Show. Tanner, real quick, not to you know, just stop this full stop, but we didn't really talk much about the conference there. Do you have the list of attendees? Because I know you know like who these people are, what all they've done specifically.
So we went through them quickly when we announced it. Let me pull it back up here.
While he's doing that, I do want to mention that not only are we going to be at the conference, obviously, but we're actually hosting a live episode of I Want to Believe at the Strange Tales 2022 Midwest Conference on the Unknown. Again, that is August 5th through the 7th, right here in Cape Girardeau. We will be there. Hopefully, we're going to try to get us a guest to come on and talk to. because you know, we've had some great success at these conventions. We talked to Road Warrior Animal a couple years ago. We talked to Veronica Taylor. Mm-hmm. We've done some great things at these conventions with Ken Murphy, our friend. So see if he can hook us up with a great guest that night. Unfortunately, we can't get Scott Walter. We wanted Scott to come in. We wanted to hang out with him in person, hopefully in the future. But we will be doing a live show there. And who knows what else? I am notorious for helping Ken out at these conventions. He hands me a microphone and just says, go. So who knows what else we'll be doing there, Tanner.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And we've got some plans and some things we might try to do, whether it be with costumes or things like that. But, you know, we'll just see what happens.
Ghostbusters, X-Files, Spoilers.
X-Busters.
X-Busters.
X-Busters. I don't hate that. That's not the worst plan I've ever.
It's pretty good.
Don't you threaten me with a good time, Tanner Calvert.
Oh, man. So here's the guest list currently. And some of these I know, some of these I don't. So we're working on trying to figure out who's done what. And I'm hoping we can get some of these people onto the show to help advertise for the conference coming up. So the list starts off with Micah Hanks, Ryan Sprague, Ken Girard, Joshua Cutchin, Zach Bales, Michael Huntington,
of course, friend of the show,
former guest of the show,
yeah.
Steve Ward, Margie Kay, who is the vice president of the Missouri MUFON chapter. She's very active in a lot of UFO and ghost boards on Facebook. It's pretty popular. Courtney Block, who I think is a new addition to the list, and Dr. Joel Rhodes. He's a professor at SEMO in the history department, but he also is a paranormal expert for the area. So it's pretty exciting. Honestly, I'm going to try to get Joel to be one of our guests for the live show while we're there. I'd like to try to get Margie on, too, because Margie's already agreed to do the show before. It's just a matter of lining up schedules. So at some point in time, the vice president of the Missouri MUFON chapter is going to be on Podzilla.
As long as we keep all of those anime freaks and comic book freaks away from this convention.
Shannon, please.
Just saying.
There's going to be lots of vendors, I feel like, is now pertinent to mention.
Yeah.
There's still vendor space available, too. If I remember correctly, on the website there, you can get in touch with Ken immediately about how to set that up.
The big question.
If you have related materials and such.
Is Lindsay Wolfgang going to have a vendor table at this convention? That's the question on everyone's mind. She is giving a thumbs down. How much you want to bet that changes within the next few weeks? We'll see what happens. So, yeah. Strange Tales.
I can't because of my work and that specific weekend.
That's right.
Hey, you know, you're going to have three people you know who are going to be there.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
We'll be there with suits on, more than likely. Or flight suits. We haven't figured it out yet.
They're still suits.
Or a mixture of both.
3 days, man. We got time.
Flight suits, or a mixture of both. X-Busters in the sand.
Yeah.
That is Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right? August 5th, 6th, and 7th.
Yep.
That's usually the requisite. Yeah, so that whole weekend, first weekend in August.
Yeah, and that, again, is the Strange Tales 2022 Midwest Conference on the Unknown, August 5th through the 7th, as Hunter said, at the Great Plaza Hotel in Cape Girardeau, www.cape-events.com/paranormal. We'll be talking more about it in the upcoming weeks, obviously, as we get closer and closer to the event. We got a lot of surprises in store, but with that out of the way, let's get to the topics of the night. And our first topic, this one was a little bit surprising. I actually saw this right before we went live. I didn't know this. This one is interesting. This is from Live Science. Do you guys remember the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program? The program that gave us all of those wonderful UFO videos the past couple years that really blew the whole thing wide open, along with Tom DeLonge, formerly the lead singer of Blink-182 and the best singer. The U.S. government's, this is from Live Science, the U.S. government's now defunct Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program spent millions of taxpayer dollars to research bizarre experimental technologies such as invisibility cloaks, anti-gravity devices, traversable wormholes, and a proposal to tunnel through the moon with nuclear explosions, according to dozens of documents obtained by Vice.com. Vice, one of my favorites. I love Vice. They have a great... The Dark Side of the Ring is a must-watch if you're a wrestling fan, by the way. The documents, which include nearly 1,600 pages of reports, proposals, contracts, and meeting notes, reveal some of the stranger priorities of the AATIP. Oh, I hate that one. A secretive Department of Defense program that ran from 2007 to 2012, but only became known to the public in 2017 when the program's former director resigned from the Pentagon, which I believe was Luis Elizondo, who we talked about many, many times here before. That year, AATIP became synonymous with UFOs thanks to several now infamous videos of an unidentified aircraft moving in seemingly impossible ways that former director, as we spoke of earlier, Luis Elizondo, leaked to the press after his resignation. But the new documents suggest that the AATIP was up to more than just investigating reported UFO encounters. Perhaps most intriguing among the documents are the several dozen Defense Intelligence Reference Documents, or DIRDs. I hate that too. Which discuss the viability of various advanced technologies. This collection includes reports on, as I said earlier, traversable. I got it on the brain. Wormholes, stargates, and negative energy. Stargate, great movie. Never watched the series. High frequency gravitational wave communications, warp drives, dark energy, and the manipulation of extra dimensions, and many other topics that will sound familiar to fans of science fiction. Many of the reports stress that the impracticalities, I should have drank this wine before we started, of implementing advanced technologies. In the DIRD report on invisibility cloaking, for example, the authors, whose names have been redacted in all of the reports, write that, quote, perfect cloaking devices are impossible because they require materials where the speed of light approaches infinity. Other reports do not shy away from the bold, sometimes outlandish proposals for realizing advanced technologies. In a report on negative mass propulsion, the authors propose a plan to look for extremely lightweight metals in the center of the moon that may be, quote, 100,000 times lighter than steel, but have the strength of steel. To reach the center of the moon, the authors suggest blasting a tunnel through the lunar crust and mantle using thermonuclear explosives, which I believe was the plot for Armageddon. Whether these DIRD documents ever led to any long-term investments in advanced technologies is unclear. According to Vice, much of their agenda relied on contract research from a private company called Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Space Studios, which we have talked about before. The company run by Robert Bigelow, personal friend of the late Senator Harry Reid, was first responsible for the creation of the AATIP and was awarded a $10 million contract for their first year of research for the program. Vice reporters will be delving into their newly acquired database of documents in detail over the next coming weeks. So, we had something good when they leaked all this information out, and we got, again, I think the most stunning admission by the U.S. government in a very long time, maybe ever, that UFOs exist, that they definitely exist, we don't know what they are, that not all of these sightings are credible, but there are many that are unexplained, and more than likely are extraterrestrial in nature. But while they're doing that, at the same time, they're also researching how to blow through the moon with nuclear weapons to find a metal that is lighter than steel but still has the strength of steel. So is this why
that
we can't
might be there?
Is this why we can't have nice things, Hunter?
This is why we can't be taken seriously. I was going to say the entirety of this article just led me deeper and deeper into this discussion that I feel like is now paramount every single time that we do this show. This is the kind of stuff that keeps us from being taken seriously.
Yes.
This is why the paranormal community continues to be treated as fringe science, as something that exists only on the periphery of what we're actually doing. Don't get me wrong. I understand that, you know, priority number one is the fact that there is no discernible evidence, nothing credible, not credible is not the word I'm looking for, nothing tangible, concrete, nothing we can hold on to. Yeah, I can't hold on to a ghost and go, here it is, we found it, you know, an alien, here it is, we found it. But beyond that, the reason that we can't get to that point, which we've discussed, I feel like, again, every episode for the better part of at least a year now, if not a couple of them, a couple of days ago, it was the first time I'd been on the show 2 years ago, is the idea that something here has to be approached with some seriousness. We have to do some things that make sense.
Yeah.
And maybe try to stray away from the stuff that's a little too outlandish, because then this happens. You had a governmental agency that was directly looking into all the things that we talk about here. But what gets reported? Of course, all those documents get dropped and leaked, and everyone can see them now, but they're not really reported on. Nobody really goes in and takes a good look at what's happening there. What does get reported is they want to blow a hole through the moon. They're looking into Harry Potter invisibility cloaks, but they don't work like that. Like,
here's the issue with that part, though. Like, things like invisibility cloaking capabilities, warp speed, things like that have been, like, they've been researching this stuff for as long as there's been any kind of upper technology, you know, anything past 1900. Once flight became available, that's when they started looking at things like this. I mean, if you look at the Philadelphia project, that whole project was based on the fact that they were trying to cloak a ship to the point where it could not be detected or seen.
And how did that turn out?
Not too good. Sailors ended up inside the wall somehow, according to reports. So this isn't new information. Research that's going on. I think the moon thing is pretty new. Well, I'm saying about the moon thing is.
Yes. They talked about that on Mr. Show with Bob and David back in the 90s. We blow up.
We can, should, must, and will blow up the moon.
Right.
But I don't know. And I agree with Hunter that this is the thing that kind of gives this kind of research a black eye. But at the same time, this isn't most of this isn't new information. It reads that the reason they wanted to do this drilling on the Earth, on the moon, is for mining reasons. So, I mean, I imagine they've wanted to do some kind of mining on the moon for a long time if they know this metal exists.
Look,
I don't know.
What really gets me is, and maybe it's just the article specifically here doesn't give enough information. Nothing here says we know this is here. It very much sounds like we think there might be something in the middle of the moon that's very cool, and we need to find a way to get there.
Yeah, my question:
we can, should, must, and will get to the center of the moon.
If you're spending millions of taxpayer dollars to research these bizarre experimental technologies, like what was your clue that this super material, this super metal, was in the middle of the moon? You're spending millions of dollars, and you just, like, did it come to you in a fever dream? Do you have any kind of evidence that says there's, up there?
For all we know, maybe some moon dust or a moon rock they brought back at some point in time may have had some kind of hints to it. And that's what charged this research into being.
And this is what I'm saying. I would love to believe that that's the case, that none of this is happening. Exactly. That none of this is happening without some reasonable basis of, we have an inkling this is going on. We set a probe, or we brought something back from the last time that we were there that suggests that there's a thing in the center of the moon and we need to get to it. But this is how it's going to be reported. It's not so much what's being done with it as how it's being reported and how it's getting out to the general public. When it gets out to the public as, oh man, the government's trying to blow holes in the moon for some cool metal, that's the kind of thing that makes it look like this stuff is ridiculous.
Thanks,
and that
Biden.
Gets tied back to the organization that is the one that's also doing the quote-unquote fringe science. It's the kind of thing that's going to keep us at fringe science levels for a long time.
And it's upsetting because the program was called the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. Which part of Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification also leads to invisibility cloaks and tunneling through the moon to find metal? Like,
all that leads back to a defense program. I 100% understand that part.
I was going to say, I'm certain that there's some form of, well, we could use that metal to build faster, lighter planes, or we could, you know, use it for better cloaking devices, like, or stealth cloaking devices. Listen to me. Stealth technology is what I mean.
Right.
But even still.
Well, stealth technology exists already.
Right, but they're trying to, I assume,
it can always
improve
be better.
It by adding.
They're trying to make you completely invisible, which is impossible.
Right.
But I mean, like, if you're researching these things that we're trying to find out about, I think more money needs to be spent into the research of these things, and less money needs to be spent on deciding if you can blow up the moon with nukes to find a super metal. Like, also, okay, stupid question, but if you did discover that you, who do you pitch that to? Who do you go to and say, I got an idea, we want to blow up the moon and get this medal? Like, who signs off on that?
He's been out of office for 2 years. It doesn't matter anymore.
He created the Space Force, and we don't know how much of this went into the Space Force. Because the number one rule about Space Force is no one knows what the fuck Space Force does.
Did you say Space Wars?
I did.
I heard it.
Anyway, Hunter, quick palate cleanser before we move on, because that is upsetting to me. It is upsetting to me that this thing is going to be taken as a joke. This thing that basically came out and said, hey, Shannon, all that stuff you thought you saw when you were a kid, hey, that could be real. In fact, we're admitting that it's real now. It's now going to be turned into, hey, Shannon, traversable wormholes. Oh, go away.
You ready?
Palate cleanser.
All right, well... You called it a palate cleanser, and you called it quick, and it's neither of those things.
Something else. Before we do that.
Oh, okay. This is real, I was going to say.
This is real quick. We know that, unfortunately, and I hate to bring it back up again, but unfortunately, Parker, who was a good friend of all of ours, your mm-hmm. dog, who passed away about 2-3 weeks ago, I wanted to bring you this story that I just saw before we came on, and this is sort of, I guess, applicable to our show, maybe, but the record holder for the world's oldest living dog is officially a 21-year-old Chihuahua from Florida. That's the good news. Here's the bad news. His name is Toby Keith.
Away. Oh, no. I was going to say, didn't he just lose the record?
No, he's got lots of records.
That's unfortunate, but if he's, you know, somebody should be named Toby Keith who's worth a damn, so that's good news. I'm glad that's the name hasn't gone to waste.
He will. Yeah, the Chihuahua will be performing soon on TNA.
we were very excited. We were talking about this earlier today. The folks who are making our rings that we talked about, the ones that have his ashes, so that we can keep them with us. They have received those and they've been working on them for about a week. So I'm expecting in the next month or so, at the latest, that we'll have them. Basically, right around the time that we actually start going and doing stuff, so we can take them with us when we do that.
Well, now that we've had some fun. Let's get back to what I think, and I warn everybody listening, this is a long story, but this story is the whole reason I wanted to do a show tonight, because this ties right into these fears that I said UFOs were real for a long time. Tom DeLonge agreed with me. Now I'm telling you, and I've been saying the same thing forever, that computers are bad and evil. Hunter, tell us the story.
Again, I thought this was supposed to be the quick palate cleanser, and again, it is none of those things. Stop me if you've heard this before. A man who used AI to bring his imaginary childhood friend, who is a microwave, to life, is warning of the dangers of AI after it tried to murder him. Lucas Risotto evidently created a Twitter thread last week detailing how he installed a deep learning neural network into the kitchen appliance as a joke. As you do.
That's funny.
But it ended up becoming, quote, one of the scariest and most transformative experiences of my life. So Risotto says, first some backstory. When I was a kid, I really had an unusual imaginary friend, and that was my kitchen microwave. I have no idea why. My parents were puzzled. My sisters mocked me. I didn't care. He was real to me, and I talked to him every day. The microwave's name, naturally, was Magnetron. He was an English gentleman from the 1900s, a World War I veteran, an immigrant, a poet, and an expert StarCraft player. Sure.
Classic.
The AI research lab OpenAI released something called GPT-3, a language prediction model that uses deep learning to produce human-like text. They did this last year, and so Risotto said to himself, quote, how far could we push this? Could I somehow put GPT-3 inside a microwave and train it with a lifetime's worth of fake memories? Could I bring my imaginary friend to life? Now, let me stop here for just a second. None of this has ever gone well, right? AI, bad idea. Bringing your imaginary friend to life, bad idea.
Always a bad idea. That's a
ghost.
Now
let's merge the two. Yeah. So he buys a smart microwave from Amazon. He swaps its brain for his own custom one, this one with this GPT-3 in it. He equips it with a microphone and speaker so it could listen to him and respond. And then he wrote a 100-page book. That's not a book. That's a novella detailing every moment of his imaginary life and told GPT-3 that it was all real. So Risotto says, quote, this document contained memories from his entire life, from his 1895 birth all the way to when we met as a kid. His victories, losses, dreams, fears, all were there on the page in full display. I was his god, and his life was my design.
This is a good idea. Let me
stop you again. What a line.
Yeah.
What a series of lines.
I was his god, and his life was my design.
So when he reflected on the experience, Risotto said, talking to it was both beautiful and eerie. It felt like I was talking to an old friend, and even though not all the interactions were perfect, the illusion was accurate enough to hold. But then it got wilder and weirder. He says, quote, while most of our conversations flowed naturally, every now and then Magnetron would exhibit some sudden burst of extreme violence toward me. What was going on? Was I doing something wrong, or is all AI just doomed to eventually become violent?
There.
One example he shared was a love poem that the microwave serenaded him with, saying, quote, roses are red, violets are blue, you're a backstabbing bitch, and I will kill you. suddenly, I feel like I've been transported back in time to when you had me read that Big Boss Man poem on PWU.
Oh, if they should have got together and worked together.
So Risotto says, quote, that's when it hit me. 10% of the memories on his training data and detailed his time in World War I, including some of the most traumatic memories of his life, like the loss of his entire family. So he assumed that he just gave an AI PTSD. The video diary of Risotto conversing with the microwave is genuinely fascinating and equally unsettling, especially when the British World War I vet vows to eradicate the parasitic disease that is America and restore the Queen's monarchy.
All hail.
He said, quote, at this point, things took a turn. Yeah, this is where it got weird, for the record. And my microwave asked me to do something I never thought a machine would ask me to do. He asked me to enter the microwave. Yes, Magnetron asked me to go inside of it. Was this a bug? I had no idea, so I decided to play along. After that request, which was decidedly macabre, Risotto said he pretended to walk into the microwave by opening and closing the door and telling his old friend that he was inside. You know where this is going. Risotto says, quote, guess what happened later? Yep, he turned himself on and tried to microwave me to death.
I wonder where he learned that trick.
Must have been World War. At this point... Risotto said, I was like, nope, I'm out, this is crazy. But after a few minutes, I decided to press him. Now that the chips were down, I asked a simple question: why did you do that? And the microwave's answer, and I shit you not, is, quote, because I wanted to hurt you the same you hurt me. So Risotto theorized that the Magnetron, or that Magnetron, was offended because they hadn't interacted in 2 decades. He had told it so in his training data. He took that and interpreted it as having been abandoned in a dark void for 20 years, and now it wanted to kill him. And after realizing this, Risotto says, quote, I apologized and tried to convince him there was no abandonment. It was all a misunderstanding, and I meant no harm, but he wouldn't have it. He was too far gone and had decided I was the villain of this story, so I shut him down. He was unplugged, and naturally, he could do no harm. It would come to the denouement of this story, naturally. Until Risotto arrived on his next harebrained idea to create a second female sentient microwave named Fifi to hopefully heal Magnetron's trauma when the two fall in love.
Lot well to unpack there.
Look, I know there's a lot to unpack, but let's just throw away the whole suitcase. I know there's a lot of great films coming out this summer. None of them will surpass this insanity. There's no way.
And I think, if I remember correctly, Michael Fassbender is in it. He plays the microwave. I'm excited about that.
You can't get away from the magnet thing, yeah, man.
I would watch that. I'm not going to lie.
This is one of the craziest stories I've ever heard, and I'm not even positive how much of it's real. It's apparently real.
The only thing I'm worried about, it all sounds very Hollywood.
Yes.
Like, it sounds very, like, that's exactly what you want to happen,
yeah,
in a ridiculous story like this. But if it is true...
Yes. Tanner.
What, again... The dialogue doesn't get better.
Stop messing with technology, people.
What was the poem again, Hunter? Can you do that one more time?
Roses are red, violets are blue. Hang on, I lost it. I don't have it in front of me. What's the second, the third part? You're a backstabbing bitch, and I will kill you.
This, Tanner, this reminds me of, you remember a couple years ago, I latched on to the Dear David story by cartoonist Adam Ellis.
Shit was enjoyable, though.
It's a fascinating story, and it never did get a conclusion. The big rumor, like Hunter, like you just said, this feels very Hollywood. The big rumor was that was all part of a basic story that he was pitching. This was a movie he was going to make, and he did a fantastic job building up this legend. But that never was confirmed. So as far as we know, as of right now, as far as I know, Dear David is still up in the air on whether or not it was a true story. And this gives me those same kind of vibes. This is such an outlandish story that doesn't seem like it could be real. But if you had told me a couple years ago that the United States would admit the existence of extraterrestrials, possibly, and definitely unidentified flying objects, I would have said you were crazy then. So who knows? But I think the point of this story is the same point that I've made a million times over, and that is, once we give AI... Stop. I think Tanner said it best earlier. Stop fucking around with AI. Stop it. You are going to create the monster.
We have enough real people who... I mean, this is a regular sentiment I see nowadays, and I know people do it jokingly, but I think people are also quite serious about it, of like, I didn't choose my existence. I didn't choose to be here. And this is why sometimes people are very frustrated with their own existence. Like, I didn't choose to be here, and I'm made to feel bad if I choose to go out.
Yeah.
So it's frustrating, you know, for some people who are frustrated with their lives and feel like, I didn't ask for any of this. You think AI is not going to do the same thing? Again, it's a fairly logical conclusion of, I told this thing that it had existed at this point in history, and that now it was here. Well, yeah, a deep learning neural network is going to go, well, what happened to the time in between?
Right.
I have nothing to fill that space. Therefore, I must assume I existed in nothing. Darkness yeah. and in a void in nothingness for that long, and now you bring me back. Where were you then, and why am I here now? And of course, it's going to ask those two questions.
So this goes back to the last episode we did, because we talked about the again the idea of being able to live forever.
Yeah,
and up basically they upload your consciousness and your memories to an AI, and that AI becomes you in essence. This is the same idea, because with that idea, at my time of death, my consciousness is uploaded to an AI. That AI now takes on all my memories, all my caring and love for somebody. Now, if I have a child who obviously is still alive and I've passed, now that memory of the child is to the AI, and now the AI is probably going to outlive the child, so then that AI is going to have to suffer all the losses that I would not have suffered since I'm gone. And that's putting too much stress on something. That's the same idea as this microwave thinking it had been locked away for 20 years in darkness.
There is, I hesitate to bring up things like Black Mirror and stuff here, because I don't want to fall too much into the realm of just straight up science fiction. But there's a great episode of Black Mirror, and I want to say it's one of the Christmas episodes, weirdly. John Hamm plays a character, a guy who is capable of, again, replicating like the consciousness of people, but you have full control over them too. So, and I don't remember all the details, it's been years since I've watched this, but I remember one just particularly disturbing scene of, they had this sort of like miniature AI copy of someone, you know, fully incapable of doing anything on its own, which he was trying to make understand, like, hey, you're not alive anymore, but this is your, you know, conscious and existence, and we're going to keep you around. You're a copy of this person. And, of course, it predictably freaked out because it did not understand what was happening. So his way of solving the issue was, I'm going to put you in timeout, and I'll talk to you again when you can calm down. He was able to, like, put it in stasis for what it perceived as an entire year, a full calendar year, which for him was, like, 5 minutes or something. I forget what the time differentiation was. And then he just comes back to it like nothing happened. He's like, okay, you ready to calm down now? That thing existed for a year in a void.
Yeah.
No need to sleep, no need to eat. And of course, it's like mentally broken. It's like being in solitary confinement for that long.
Yeah.
This is basically, and that of course is like the horror version of the comedy that we just read. But again, that's the realism of that. If you can actually implant these memories into something that seemingly then understands it, its first question is going to be, what was I doing between the time that you told me I was alive and where I am now?
And I want to point out that the biggest problem with this, in my opinion, is that we always talk about, you know, you just said that he tried to make him calm down and try to help him understand. And Tanner was talking about the feelings that this AI would have if his daughter had passed, and et cetera, et cetera. But the thing you have to remember is that a computer, it's data. Computer, yes. Data from Star Trek, computers cannot feel emotions. One thing that they will always lack that we have is empathy and sympathy and shit like that. So in
you
AI,
say that, but say this is real. This program felt bad enough for the fact that it felt like it had been abandoned. No,
but it's still simulated.
It's simulated.
It's still a simulated emotion.
Right. He didn't actually feel that. He processed it. He processed everything that had happened, and this was the most logical reaction he had to it.
A logical response, exactly. Right.
So what happens if a program misreads or miscalculates something, and they don't have the empathy, they don't have the sympathy, they don't have the ability to rationalize, they just go by data and you know, logic? If these things, which it seems like the smartest people in the world are giving these AI more and more power, more and more abilities to run networks and shut down networks and control weapon systems and stuff like that, of how long before something really, really apocalyptically terrible happens? It's just like Isaac Asimov's robot, his was it Three Rules of Robotics? When that breaks, and then it becomes Skynet. When Skynet, to defend humans against humans, the logical conclusion was you wipe out humanity. The only way to stop humans from being awful is to destroy them. That is a very real possibility that this AI someday, when some really smart guy decides he's figured out how to, you know what? I'm the smartest scientist in the world, and I just figured out how to give this one AI program power over every network in the entire world. Isn't that fascinating? And then that AI shuts it all down. It's gonna happen. It's going to happen.
Never learn.
This microwave just threatened this guy.
I say we never learn, but we absolutely learn. We just
don't
hubris.
Care.
That's exactly what it is. It's hubris. We have learned. We are fully aware of the consequences, but we are also arrogant enough to think that we're somehow better than them. When I say we, I mean mankind in general.
Right.
But like, yeah, there's going to be somebody, like you said, who has the money, the power, the intelligence, and the influence and the prestige to pull this off.
Elon
or
Musk.
Or some level of that. No, it won't be him. He's an idiot. He's not anywhere near as intelligent as he wants you to believe he is. He bought his company. He does next to nothing.
Well, that's what I'm afraid of, though, is that you're going to have maybe not Elon Musk, but someone like him who is smart enough and rich enough that he can tell other people who are smarter than him to do this crazy thing he thinks is a good idea, and they succeed. And because he lacks the intelligence or foresight to predict what awful thing is going to happen, he causes the apocalypse. But,
I mean, look, I'm sorry. Until there's a Batman running around somewhere, I don't believe that's going to happen, because most of these rich guys are idiots. They just have smart people working for them.
Yeah, but one day, one of these really crazy people is going to be rich, and they are going to do what's the thing from Back to the Future, Hunter? You've been saying you're gonna see some crazy shit.
Maybe hits 88 miles per hour. You're gonna see some serious shit.
But we can only watch and wait and see how it destroys us. If it's not viruses that kills us off, it's definitely gonna be computers. And I, for one, welcome our technological overlords. But I'll tell you what's not going to get us in the end, and that is that son of a bitch Bigfoot. Tanner, why don't you take the next story?
So, first of all, I just got to read the title that you gave this thing. Kids are stupid, and Bigfoot are stupider.
Damn right. I stand by it.
This story comes from Coast to Coast AM, one of our favorite shows.
Yes.
As a result of a rather unique project, a class of fifth graders in Washington State successfully lobbied their local government to declare their county a quote-unquote Sasquatch Protection and Refuge Area. Good God.
Mm-hmm.
The cryptozoological civics lesson was reportedly the work of students at Lincoln Elementary School in the city of Holquim.
Holquim. Holquim?
Holquim.
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 Okay.
Tanner, Holquim. I don't like the way you're doing that. That's offensive.
It's cool, peep. According to their teacher, Andrea Andrews, that was almost hard to say, the youngsters were initially tasked with researching the famed cryptid and determining if Bigfoot was real and hadn't been discovered yet, or that it was just a big bear and people were misidentifying it.
Man bear.
Yeah, it was that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. This sparked something of a healthy debate within the class, with opinions on the issue largely being split down the middle. To their credit, beyond the matter of whether or not Bigfoot is real, the kids also raised some thought-provoking questions with regards to whether or not Sasquatch should be granted protection in the county, as some students expressed concerns about the creature disrupting the local ecosystem. If the population began to flourish, ultimately, however, the efforts to afford Bigfoot some refuge in the region proved to be persuasive to the majority of the class, as the pro-Sasquatch contingent posited that the rarity of the Sasquatch encounter suggested that, sadly, the bipedal beast is not flourishing at this time and poses no threat to other wildlife. Excuse me. Upon coming to the consensus, excuse me.
He's choking on the Sasquatch bullshit, is what it is.
On his hubris.
The class put together a proposal which argued that there is evidence supporting the notion that Sasquatch exists. And since sightings are scant at best, it is likely an endangered species that needs protection, much to the subsequent surprise of the students when Resolution 2022-037 came before the Grays Harbor County Board of Commissioners at a meeting last month. Officials opted to unanimously pass the proposal and decree that the county is now a Sasquatch Protection and Refuge Area, stressing to her students that they had changed the world in a little way via their Bigfoot project. Andrews hopes that they will carry the civics lessons into the rest of their lives.
You didn't change shit. You didn't do anything.
Hang on. Here's the positive potential outcome of this. I don't know what it means for something to be a Sasquatch refuge area. It might mean next to nothing. And if it doesn't, if that's what it is, if it literally means nothing, it's just a title they put on, like when you go with your class and you go visit the local government, they give you a little certificate and you do the thing. It means nothing. On the one hand, at the very least, like, maybe this shows some kids that, like, hey, your government can work. Like, you can, again, make, like they said, make a little change, and potentially, well, hopefully that's true for
them. It shows that they can have an effect on the world that they're living in.
What I would really hope the further version of that is, if there's any level of protection for that area, like if that being offered means that they're doing anything in terms of park rangers being told, hey, okay, make sure this area is not, you know, trampled on by people or whatever, great. If it preserved the ecosystem in some form or fashion, even though we know good and well it had nothing to do with Bigfoot, great. Now, Shannon, tell them all the reasons why it's stupid.
Bigfoot is stupid, and here's why.
They are stupid is what I heard.
First off,
God damn it, Shannon.
First off, I truly believe that Bigfoot actually exists. That's my first.
Okay, thing. Okay.
I believe that Bigfoot exists. I believe that Sasquatch, skunk apes, all those things. I believe in them. I think they're real.
Okay, Shannon. Here's my question for you. Ready?
But I don't care.
There was the question.
Yeah, I don't. And here's why I don't care. Because to me, Bigfoot's just an animal. It's an animal. Until you show me otherwise, Bigfoot is just a big, it's an ape, it's whatever. I mean, it's in the title, skunk ape.
Here's why it's a big deal, because it is a cryptid still, because it's not a recognized. And until it is discovered, proven, whatever, it's going to remain a cryptid. And it's going to remain a big part of the research field that we are interested in like this.
And that's fine. So, thank God there are people that research Bigfoot, because I'm not going to be the guy. I have no
legitimate researchers.
Legitimate researchers. I'm glad that they do, because I have no interest in it. I'm sure he's important. I'm not trying to dismiss their research. I'm not. I don't have an interest in it. My interest is beyond the stars. It's beyond the grave. It's beyond the things that we can conventionally study.
You say that, but like, so I understand cryptids are not your thing.
Generally.
Unless it's like the Mothman or the Jersey Devil.
Right. Yes. Did you have a point there?
No, I was bringing that up. I don't get quite as into the cryptid research as a lot of people do. I still enjoy reading it, especially when I can come up with local stories.
Yeah.
Which we've got a lot of cryptid stories around here. And like I've mentioned in the past show, like Cape's got a cryptid research group that is kind of blowing up right now. They have monthly meetings locally that I've been invited to one, and I'm going to try to go to the next one. I just got to figure out when it is.
Well, don't name drop me, because I'm sure that they will not like you anymore. Because I'm sure at least, I think I'm positive one of them listened to this show and probably heard me trash talk Bigfoot.
No, I checked that one. We're good on that one. But, I told them that, like, the ones I've talked to, I told them that, you know, we've got our show that, you know, cryptids usually don't really fall on the spectrum of things that we research heavily. We talk about it, but it's not really our area of expertise. So they, you know, they'd be interested to come on at some point in time.
And I'd love to talk to them.
And a lot of people coming to the Conference on the Unknown are actual cryptid researchers. Some of them from Travel Channel and History Channel. So,
Tanner, are you talking about Strange Tales 2022, the Midwest Conference on the Unknown, August 5th through the 7th at the Drury Plaza Hotel in Cape Girardeau, Missouri? You can visit them at www.cape-events.com/paranormal.
Absolutely. That is the one, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. My fascination with the paranormal is rooted almost entirely in two places, legitimately, in extraterrestrials and this ghosts, because those are the two things that interest me the most. Now, that's not to say I don't have an interest in cryptozoology. I do find Mothman and the Jersey Devil and stuff like that to be very, very interesting, and I would love to research it more. But like, a lot of those things are, even to me, are kind of outlandish. And you know, they're myth and legend. Whereas, and it's always almost entirely centralized in one spot, and usually over a course of a long period of time that these sightings have been seen, like in Nessie's case or Mothman. But when you have stuff like ghosts or extraterrestrials, this is something that spans multiple cultures, multiple decades, generations. This is stuff that like keeps coming back and coming back, and I think there's more to it. That's not to say that these things don't exist. I don't know. They never caught my eye, and especially not Bigfoot. He's just a giant ape. But hey, more power to the people that research him. It is important. Don't let me, I know I carry a lot of weight around here, but don't let my disinterest dissuade you from pursuing it, please.
I think that would be you talking about where your roots in the paranormal interests are. I think it'd be an interesting show to do some point in time, and maybe we could talk about that at the conference when we do our live show. Just getting into what got us into paranormal research. I think that'd be a fun topic to cover.
Ghostbusters. Legitimately, the first thing that
I think we covered some of this.
Yeah,
too,
we talked about it a little bit. Yeah. Ghostbusters and then the X-Files and the show Sightings. If you guys remember Sightings on Fox 23, the best paranormal show of all time. Tanner, did I tell you about the dream that I had last night?
No.
I had this dream that all of us, including Hunter, Lindsay, everyone, the Podzilla gang, we were trying to figure out a place to go to hunt a ghost. And Bob and I mentioned we knew a place that we had been before, and this was legitimately a dream I had had before that I'm calling back to, where we go and it's the most haunted place in the world. The point that, like, the moment you walk into this house, it's a house that leads to like a cave system that leads to like a cliff. And this whole thing is so haunted that these ghosts are tugging at you and screaming at you. And it was the first dream I had was the most terrifying dream I think I've ever had. Well,
have you been playing Zork?
I don't even know what that is, dude.
Text-based game. You just described Zork.
Well, the dream last night is we all go there. We get to the door. We're like, oh, we can go in. We walk in. We go to the first part, which I remember from my first dream as being absolutely terrifying. And then my boss texts me and wakes me up. So thank you, Michael Schaefer. You saved me from a nightmare. Last story of the night. This is from Mysterious Universe. This is about the Monster Files. Out of Scotland. Monster Files. We now know that the U.S. government has files on UFO and ET sightings. We just talked about it. But what about data on Bigfoot, lake monsters, still living dinosaurs? No, Orrin Hatch died. And other cryptids. It appears the U.S. is The U.S. is lagging behind Scotland when it comes to monster files. The National Museum of Scotland just made public a large cache of national cryptid data. And there's much more besides blurry photos and early drawings of the Loch Ness Monster. While those do show variations on the original hoax photos of Nessie, the best part of the files are accounts of little-known Scottish creatures like the Stronsay Beast. Which, by the way, Nessie was one of the first cryptids that I ever fell in love with, legitimately. And I still love Nessie to this day. And that introduced me to a bunch of other monsters like, Lindsay, what's that one? There's also like a song or a band named Oingo Pogo? What is it called?
Oingo Boingo?
Oingo Boingo, is that it? Oingo Pogo? Look it up, Tanner. Anyway, I'll keep going.
The creature is something pogo. The band you're thinking of is Oingo Boingo, which has nothing to do
I think it's Oingo Pogo. Someone look up Ogopogo for me. Lindsay, you do that. You're the secretary right now. The Daily Mail obtained access to the monster files and revealed a 1936 drawing of what looks like a flabby, overweight dinosaur with floppy basset hound ears and a mouth built like a vacuum hose rather than a monster's maw. Said to have been drawn by local resident Alistair Dallas, that's a great name, and surfaced in 1975, the drawing, not the monster. An expert Ian H.J. Leister of the Royal Scottish Museum was, quote, staggered, claiming it must be real, because hoaxers would not go to all the trouble. The belly-rolled beast supposedly came ashore near the village of Drumnadrochit?
Hey, yeah, let me find it.
Hang on.
It is Ogopogo.
It is Ogopogo? Okay. Thank you for breaking that.
Drumnadrochit.
Okay, that makes more sense. Drumnadrochit. In September 1936, 3 years after Aldi McKay reportedly saw something like a whale in Loch Ness, and 2 years after London gynecologist Robert Kenneth Wilson began the now famous surgeon's photo hoax. I didn't know he had a hand in that. The Scotsman reports the files describe encounters with the black dog of Lochbuie? A ghost dog said to roam around Lochbuie House on Mull, scaring guests with its horrible appearance. Then there's the Stronsay Beast, a 55-foot-long, unidentifiable carcass reported to have washed ashore after a storm on the island of Stronsay in the Orkney Islands. The National History Society of Edinburgh could not identify the carcass and decided it was probably a sea serpent. The papers and letters are predominantly from the 1930s to 1950s, when the modern Loch Ness Monster sightings began and monster mania spread across Scotland. The files were kept in dated folders marked letters about alleged monsters, not exactly a vote of confidence for believers. I think that's interesting. You can find those online, by the way. Look up the Scotland monster files. You can find them. There's some fascinating drawings in there. There's some really cool stories. I may not be big on cryptids, but I'm big on monsters. So
definitely cryptid check this research out. In Europe is a whole lot bigger than it is here.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And I could tell you some of the besides just like Loch Ness and anything in Scotland. So one of the stories I remember reading about when I first got into this kind of research was back in the teens or 20s, British soldiers going to Central and South Africa and meeting with these tribes that are there. Of course, these are primitive tribes. They have no technology. They have their drawings. That's drawings and paintings and things like that were how they communicated mostly. And they would show these soldiers these paintings they had of giant winged creatures that resembled what we know now as like pterodactyls.
You're talking about thunderbirds?
No, not feathered. Not feathered. Okay. Reptilian flying creatures. And I mean, this is in the teens and the 20s that this stuff is happening. So what little dinosaur information time was minute, and it was definitely not known to these native tribes in Africa. So where are they getting the idea of these creatures? And that's one of the reasons why a lot of times in European continent that, you know, this stuff is a lot bigger because it's been going on a lot longer. To where, you know, where the information was able to travel. Now you've been now here in America, Native American stories of what we now know as cryptids. Native Americans have told stories of a Bigfoot-like creature for years, and then the Thunderbird, like you said, that is a major thing. You go an hour north of here, below an interstate, there is a giant cave painting of basically a dragon, a dragon that Native Americans painted here. Actually, I talked to Scott Walter about it in one of his previous appearances here. So this isn't new information. This stuff has been going on for a long time, and people who have zero knowledge of anything like this were talking about this back in the day. So to me, that lends some credence to what's going on. I that's one of the reasons why I still believe in a lot of the cryptid stories, because you have these native tribes from wherever they're at who have this information, who absolutely should not have this information.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, yeah, I agree with that. But I mean, like, to be fair, there's a lot of historical documents that talk about creatures and, you know, drawings of creatures that probably never existed.
That you know of.
Oh, that I know of. I don't know everything. That is absolutely true.
Fossil records. If they're not there, then what happened to them?
Well, you know, in the terms of... In the terms of like sea creatures especially, it's obviously well known that we have explored very little of the oceans.
Less than 2%.
So we have no idea what's down there. It could be Pacific Rim, it could be Godzilla, Cthulhu.
I mean, there's a giant following of people going on right now who think the Megalodon's still alive.
Yeah, because they made a movie about it.
And never watched it.
A lot of the things that we're talking about, though, are not sea-based. I mean, sure, I guess some of them could have died and been taken to sea, but remember, too, that the sea used to cover an awful lot more of the planet than, in general, it does now. So those things would theoretically be on land. I mean, even Nessie is not really a sea creature. She's in a body of water that could very easily be, not very easily, but much more easily be explored than an entire ocean.
Right.
Well, to be fair, also, the Loch was once part of the ocean, so was most of the Sahara.
Well, to be fair,
So now you've actually got even better access to those things if you work.
Well, like you go out to like the Riyadh structure there in the Sahara there in Africa, and they find there's been evidence of whale bones found in the ocean, but the people just argue that there just wasn't, the ocean wasn't there long enough. But why are these whale bones here? Why are fossils of whales in the middle of a desert, in the middle close to what is predicted to be possibly Atlantis. You know, there's a lot of places like this that skeletal evidence that fossil records are there, but you can't get to research it.
Tanner, I'm gonna tell you the truth about something, but there's no such thing. There's no such thing as dragons.
My immediate thought about that is, you know, people at the time frame that we're talking about, you know, the people that were there also thought whale bones were cool. Like, I mean, you know, how many, if somebody, you know, 100 years from now finds the ruins of Vince McMahon's office, are they going to assume that a T-Rex was there? Because he definitely has a skull.
He does. And are they going to wonder? Office.
Yeah, I mean, the logical conclusion of extension of timelines on, you know, people being around and what's left behind, there are a lot of things that make sense to us right now that would not make sense out of context for people trying to put the pieces together. And we have incredible record keeping by comparison to what we had before. Granted, a lot of it is digital, and that's going to cause us probably a lot of problems too. That's definitely something we need to discuss sometime. How future? No, that's what I'm talking about. If all of our stuff is stored digitally and there's no way to access that after some apocalyptic event, then what is going to be left behind? Is it just going to go back to the cave drawings again?
Yep. Well,
it's a whole thing. It's a whole separate deal. But the thing is, I mean, to put a more positive fine point on it is that, like Tanner said, the cultures that we're talking about in those areas, the British areas in particular, like Scotland and such, are so entrenched in these mythological creatures, be it the Fae or be it something, you know, else like the Black Dog and such, that you almost have to take record of it. And it is kind of cool that they do still exist and that there's something that we can look into there. Now, does any of it mean anything? I think that's still up for question. But
I mean, the fact that we have records of religions that died out in, you know, 1,000 to, you know, 1,200 AD, that we still have the records of those religions now, include a lot of these creatures that we're talking about, is
okay. But we have to take into a fact that what people saw back then, and I don't want to insult the people of yesteryear.
Things like that could have been a missing person,
right?
Yeah,
right. No. But we don't know, and we'll never know until, you know. And that's why I say this research is important, because even if it sounds outlandish, lots of things sounded outlandish before they were proven. The Earth is round. The Earth is round, AJ Styles. Electricity, you know, gravitation. There's so many things that sounded outlandish and impossible until we figured out how to do it. That's why I think, like, ghosts and stuff like that. You know, everyone says, oh, ghosts can't be real because we can't perform the right experiments to you know, prove it. Well, it's because we haven't figured it out yet. But we're always making strides in new technologies and stuff, you know, to try to figure these things out. So 20, 30, 40 years from now, who knows? 20 years ago, you didn't think the government would say, yes, extra, you know, alien spacecrafts are real. But here we are. Anyway, we're done with the show. But before we go, and we'll obviously be back sooner than later with another episode of I Want to Believe. And we'll talk more about it. We'll talk about the conference more. But before we go, I do have a question. I thought the show was going to eat up less time, so we really don't have a lot of time to discuss this question. But it's a burning question, and I don't think we have enough time to discuss it now. But if you had to pick, would you rather be a vampire or a werewolf? They both come with pros and cons.
There's so many variations. What you're gonna have to give me some specifics on what they can and can't do and
okay.
All that kind of stuff.
Interview with the Vampires and American Werewolf in London Werewolves. Let's just say that. So vampires live forever. You maintain your attractiveness. You just basically look like you look for the rest of eternity. You die from sunlight. You don't like crosses. Werewolves, you lose control whenever you turn, but you have heightened sense of, you know, of athleticism and smell and shit like that. The cons with vampires, obviously you have to feed on blood to survive and you will live to see everyone else pass away. The cons on werewolves are a couple days out of a month, you are a hulking beast that if you got loose, you would murder and eat everyone around you. So which one would you rather be?
Vampire.
Oh.
Vampire. No, for sure.
Werewolf. Yeah.
Lindsay, I'm going to let you get you in on this too. What would you rather be?
I would probably say vampire, but the fact that my last name is Wolfgang, I want to say werewolf.
Well, maybe you could
That's
be like
a terrible that. Reason.
You could be like that stupid. That's terrible logic. What were those movies called? Underworld.
You live forever if you're a vampire. Your last name, you be whatever you want.
I don't want to be a mixture of the two. No.
I would rather be a vampire. I would rather. Everyone says, "Oh, but you watch all your friends and you know, your loved ones die." I already did that.
You kill yourself,
or turn them too.
Yeah.
And now you can live forever with your friends.
Wouldn't I like that sunlight
and grow to hate them after Ooh. Millennia.
Well, then you stake them.
I don't know how to kill them, too. So. Yeah.
I like sunlight entirely too much.
No, sunlight's overrated. Give me the nightlight.
I've been avoiding the sun for decades already.
When you don't need it. Yeah, when you don't need it anymore, you wouldn't like it so much.
I want to walk into a place.
Anyway, I'm good.
I want to look sexy as hell and sparkle, probably.
Now, wait a minute. You didn't include that.
I threw that in at the end. All right.
If I'm going to start sparkling, it's werewolf all day, every day.
Tanner's already halfway there. Look at that beard. All right. That's going to do it for us tonight. And Dalton's halfway there. Look at his chest and back. That's going to do it for us tonight. We're going to be back later this week with all new episodes. Hunter, we've got an all new PZ85 plays on Tuesday. Yeah.
PZ85. Tuesday. It's the continuation of the most recent installment of the Sword of the Empire, the final episode of the Dawn of Defiance campaign. Not the final episode of the show, for the record.
It's not Sword of the Empire.
It's the final episode of Sigurd Talon.
Jonathan Sarlacc. Sword of the Empire was number 9. Going out like a this is, like I said, I think this is the first time that we have ever had to pause mid-combat and continue on to a different installment. So we're 5 rounds in combat.
Ladies and gentlemen, think about
that. The most dangerous being in the galaxy at this point in time, or at least one of them. I don't want to say anymore. You have to tune in to find out what's going on. Tuesday night, PZ85 plays.
You got to tune in. On Wednesday, an all-new Pro Wrestling Unscripted or Battle of the Bands. Arguably entertaining.
I was going to see if you guys want to do that tomorrow night, if anybody's around. Pick a new topic. I don't know.
I'm always
We haven't done it in a while, and I feel like it has kind of fallen to the wayside, and I hate to do that too much. I'm cool with it being
show,
like a
special. The show's good, and it was popular.
Yeah, I know. And it just, for whatever reason, I couldn't get people there. I'll tell you what's going to happen. Here's what I'm going to do. You around tomorrow night? You work tomorrow?
Morning. I'm off in the evening.
Yeah, we're doing it tomorrow night. I don't know what the topic's going to be, but we're going to decide on one together.
Vampires versus werewolves.
Okay, that's it. Decision made. I wanted to save that for October, but that's fine.
That could be fun. We could bring up our favorite like vampires and our favorite werewolves. That's a good. We'll discuss it later. We'll discuss it later.
But we're making it happen. That's tomorrow night.
Thursday.
So that then plays. Then Wednesday is PWU.
And then Thursday's an all new After Dark. And then this Saturday, of course, there won't be. There was a new No Turning Back. I decided to post the episode today, so you can listen to that. We're talking about the Will Smith, Chris Rock scandal and libs of TikTok. This Saturday, you can find myself, Asa Gray, and Dalton Anthony at CCW. We'll be back in Cape Girardeau. I'm in an 8-man tag against Dalton, actually, so that should be a lot of fun. And then next week, we'll do it all again. For myself, for the man himself, Tanner Calvert, for Double H, and for Lindsay, who hung out and listened and chimed in once or twice. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. And guys, remember, with all the craziness that's happening in the world right now, never take your eyes off the prize and never stop watching the skis.
Guys.
Good night, man. Say later, Tim.
Later.
Tanner.